Welcome to Inspiring Stories for Bauer and O'Day. Don't miss out on the little moments because the little things are everything.
Hello, my name is Tim McMillan and welcome to another episode of Inspiring Stories brought to you by Bauer and O'Day. Don't miss out on the little moments because the little things are everything. My guests in this episode, well, I'm not quite sure where to start. Let's start from more recent times. In 2019, he was awarded the West Australian of the Year honour. But prior to that, so many things. He spent more than two decades serving in the military, including a large chunk of that within the elite SAS regiment, having served in conflicts in East Timor, Iraq, and Afghanistan, along the way earning him a Distinguished Service Medal and also a Distinguished Service Cross. After life in the military, he then ventured into the corporate world in the financial sector and has held many incredible roles throughout his time there. He's also served on the board of the West Coast Eagles, including a stint as deputy chair. He's an ambassador for the Fathering Project. The list goes on. We'll get through as much of it as we can over the course of the next hour or so. But let's say hello and welcome to James McMahon. Hello, James. How are you?
Good day, Tim. I'm great, and it's really, really good to be here. And I know before the show it was good to get to meet you and understand where you're from. And it's a reminder to me of how small Perth is.
It really is, isn't it? Very, very small. Having said that, it's a significant honour, isn't it, to be named the West Australian of the Year. Of course, we didn't have the usual ceremony in 2020 for COVID reasons. But go back to 2019. Tell us about that day, that night, when you became our West Australian of the Year.
Well, Tim, that could take some time. I'll be as brief as I can. Look, first of all, given the quality of all the people that were nominated and all the finalists, and they should be regarded as finalists because they're just in their fields. They are a group of outstanding individuals that really contribute to Western Australia. To be selected is a great honour. And you do get very humbled by that, given that quality. So you know, that's most probably the first thing about that particular evening. I suppose on the more humorous side, I went there as a finalist. I mean, someone took time out to nominate me, which I was really pleased about. But you know, sometimes you just want to get on with things. But the fact is, someone took time to do that, and I thought, you know what, it's an opportunity.
Do you know who that person was?
I do, and yeah. That'll remain nameless.
Okay. Because you were in the community sector initially. The community award was the one that you initially won.
Absolutely, and then yeah. You win that, and then you go into the yeah. into the judging for then
for the big
the
one.
West Australian of the Year. But someone nominated me, and after that nomination, I thought to myself, well, one, out of respect for that person, I'm happy to go forward and be a finalist. But the second reason is actually it's an opportunity to promote the things you're involved in. And the majority of things I'm involved in are about people supporting other people, serving their country, serving their state, and that's important. And I think also the awards themselves, I mean, West Australian of the Year, that's great. But it does kick off the Celebrate WA weekend. And look, I've got to take my hat off to the Celebrate WA, you know, the chair, right through to all the people involved with that and how it's evolved over the years. Because, you know, Western Australia, and we've seen that over this last couple of years, but it's not just the last couple of years. I mean, we're entrepreneurial. We help each other. We have a go. We have setbacks, but we continue to have a go. We're quite unique here, in my view. We serve each other, and I think we're progressive, and we should celebrate that. I mean, that is worth celebrating. Great time to reflect on things we could have done better. Great time to reflect on things we've done well. But I think overall, I mean, if you look at it on a world perspective, we're doing pretty well.
Doing okay.
You know, I wouldn't mind the Eagles being a bit higher on the ladder, but besides that, besides that, it, you know, things are good. And I'll only say it's interesting and a bit more on the humorous side. Some people have said to me, you know, I've been West Australian of the Year for 2 years. It's normally 1 year, but like a lot of things...
Silver linings to every cloud. Yeah,
there is. But some would say I take a little bit more time to get used to the role and I had to grow into it. So the extra year helped. But no. You can't help but be proud living in this state. And what I said on that night still holds true today, and because I can remember my speech because I...
So you did have something prepared just
no,
in
I
case?
No, I didn't. No? I absolutely didn't, and my daughters will attest to this, as will my wife. I went there going, who wouldn't want to go to this? I've been nominated. Let's enjoy the evening. Outstanding. Roll up. And I mean, it's just fabulous. And actually to go to the event itself, and it showcases, they have a very good audio-visual that showcases all that's going on in WA. To listen to the finalists, you know, all the video clips of the finalists and what they do. It's really quite an inspiring evening. But I went there, I said, I haven't prepared a speech because I've looked at the finalists and I'm unlikely to be up on stage. Lo and behold, the first time I win the community award and then the West Australian of the Year. But, you know, like most things, I think speaking from the heart is authentic. And so that's what I did. I had no choice. But I think one of the key points I made was about when we reflect, let's just remember all the people that serve in their community, all the people that make a difference and never get recognised through their whole life. And, you know, I think we should toast those people. They're out there today. They're doing it today. They're up early. They're going to bed late at night. They sort of don't want recognition, those people. But
they do it anyway.
They do it. And
yep, they're incredible.
My view, that whole piece, I'll use this term, it's a military term, it's actually the centre of gravity of our state. We've got beautiful physical things, but actually that spirit, that Western Australian spirit, it is our centre of gravity. When the chips are down or even when they're not, we're out helping people. We're pushing the envelope. And we're good, innovative, entrepreneurial people. And I think, you know, when I left the military, I made a decision to come back to WA for that reason, a great place to raise my children. And, you know, an opportunity to live in this state that is, in my view, continuing to go places.
Can we go right back to the early days of your life, James? Maybe set you on a path?
Right, I'm pulling out that CD now. It's taking a while to load there, Tim.
I know, we've got a lot to get through over the next little while. But let's go back to you, teenage James McMahon. You're at Aquinas College. I won't say anything about that, given that
you went to Trinity,
I came
Tim,
out of a rival school. But let's leave that to one side for the moment. What was life like for you as a teenager going to Aquinas?
Yeah, look, from a schooling perspective, life was great. You know, the thing is that Aquinas taught me, and I don't think this is just about Aquinas, is obviously I was a bit more sport orientated. I enjoyed schoolwork, but I most probably took a while to pick up things, to be fair. But that's okay. I learnt the value of hard work, that if you actually study things and if you don't get it once, we'll go and ask for advice and people can help you. It took me a while to learn that, but I got there eventually. But on the sporting side, what really got me, I didn't realise it then, but I learnt a lot about culture. Mm-hmm. I learnt a lot about teamwork. I learnt a lot about the concept of, in a team, 1 + 1 = 3, that actually if we work together as a team, we can achieve far greater than the equal parts. And that was evident in the first 18 footy, where we clearly beat Trinity.
Well, it's funny if you look on the Aquinas website and you see your profile of all the things it mentions there, and you know some of them I've mentioned already, all the amazing military honours. The very first thing that they mention is that you're a prefect and that you won the Alco Cup in the footy and the Slazenger Cup in the tennis. So that just goes to show you how seriously they take their sport.
Yeah. But I think it's that concept of I just enjoyed the and I tell you an interesting story. I'm very happy to say this and I can say it publicly, and if you can't do it now, when can you do it? I remember I was reserve for the 800 metres. And my body shape, I'm not an 800 metre runner. I mean, come on. You know, like brick maybe, shot body, that's okay. But the interesting thing is Aquinas said, no, we can train you to do that. And I learnt from a coach down there. His name is Mr. Doney. Tony Doney's his name. He wouldn't mind me saying this. But what I learnt about him is when he coached us, he said, no, we can make you into a long-distance runner. And I got reasonable times. I was reserve. I never made the team. There's a story to this. Yeah. But what was good is he would train with us. And I learnt about that leadership concept of you lead by example right from those early days. But the other thing I learnt is, and he used to have a saying, doesn't matter where you come as long as you beat the person next to you. I think Simple. That was an Aquinas thing, but anyway. No, I learnt out of that. And I suppose the other side of schooling and my time, it was quite a confusing time in my life, and I'm happy to talk about this. You know, I lost my eldest brother when I was at school. I had a couple of issues in our family life. It was actually quite a confusing time for me if I looked at it in the cold, hard light of day.
Mm.
And I learnt, and I did cadets at school. But I had enough in me to go, I needed some routine around me, which led me to join the Army as a soldier.
Yeah.
Interesting enough, when I went to the recruiters, they said I was never officer material. But
is that right?
I ended up commanding the SAS, so I did okay there. But I joined as a soldier, you know, to get framework. But I say this in a funny way.
I mean, there's seeking structure and routine, and then there's stepping into something like the SAS, I know you don't do straight away.
But. No, and I didn't. I was a soldier for a number of years and then became an officer, attended New Zealand officer school as an Australian, came back to the parachute regiment, and then I did selection then and was lucky enough to get in. But the interesting thing about that is, I joined for framework, but I also joined so I could see Sydney. I didn't realise I ended up in Kapooka, which really wasn't Sydney. But it was a great adventure, and it reminded me also in my platoon, worth mentioning, that, you know, there's always someone better off and there's always someone worse off. And that group of fellows back then, a great group of young Australian men, most of us went to infantry corps, and the rest is history then.
We'll get into that more after the break, because that's a big part of your life, 20-plus years in the military. As I mentioned, that includes stints in East Timor, Iraq and Afghanistan and other places as well, but mainly those three. Let's get into that right after we take a break. This is Inspiring Stories. James McMahon is our special guest. We'll be back with more in a moment.
You're listening to Inspiring Stories for Bowra and O'Day. Don't miss out on the little moments, because the little things are everything. Inspiring Stories for Bowra and O'Day. Don't miss out on the little moments, because the little things are everything.
Welcome back to Inspiring Stories. Our special guest is the 2019 Western Australian of the Year. In a few days from now, we'll learn who the next West Australian of the Year is. But we're in the final days of the stint as West Australian of the Year for James McMahon. James, post-schooling, you mentioned it just seemed a natural progression to go from there into the military. Did you go in there thinking, well, let's get in there first, but my ambition is to join an elite squad like the SAS, or were you kind of open to wherever it was going to take you?
Yeah, thanks, Tim. No, I was joining purely for 3 years.
Yep.
And so
what was going on in the world at that time? Were there things going on overseas that you thought, I want to serve my country as part of a bigger picture? Or,
No. I did get the big one for me was, to be really fair, like I said, there was the element of doing something with framework and meaning.
Mm-hmm.
I eventually joined infantry, so I was prepared to serve anywhere. I liked the fact of being part of a team. I think that came out of schooling for me. I liked framework. To be fair, I liked the fact that I'd got on a plane and gone to the East Coast. I know that sounds... And the fact is, you know, I think I got some huge salary. I think it was about $4,500 for the year.
Whoa.
But I liked that. Yeah. No, that was, I had my little CBA box account from the Royal Show. No, but I liked, and the fact is, You know, I think for me there was a physical aspect to it, but I liked the thinking aspect, that competitive aspect about it as well. And as my, time in the military went on, you know, I wasn't thinking about direct operations at that point because I think at that time there wasn't a lot going on. But teamwork, routine, framework, serving my country made all sense to me. But 3 years, just as a time also at a personal level, given I'd already said I'd had a few, it was a pretty confusing time with a couple of issues, particularly losing my brother. It was a time for me to maybe settle down into that routine and then move on to something else. But that didn't happen.
Do you get headhunted once you're within the military setup? Do you get headhunted for the SAS or do you have to put your hand up for it? How does
No, you have to put your hand up for it and be... And look, I had people encouraging around me to do that. But once I got into infantry, once I went to the parachute battalion, so I was jumping out of planes, it was most probably a natural step to go because that's that pursuit of excellence. And look, the military is great. It everyone has a specialist skill, and I just thought it was the next extension of infantry. In saying that, you know, infantiers are incredibly professional, but it's that challenge of the first challenge is getting through selection. Then it's actually passing your courses to get what they call beret qualified. And then it's actually performing on the job. And so I think that pursuit of excellence, I'm a very task-orientated person, much to my, you know, my wife will tell you a few things about that. But, that's, but that task and achieving things, I think, was in my mind. So it's most probably, for me as a person, a natural extension to go there. And if I got in, I got in. If I didn't, I'd be happy to continue to serve elsewhere. So... You know, I did on my first attempt, I got in. I went there relatively junior in terms of time in an infantry organisation, but that was great. It was, I mean, the selection course, I mean, it pushes you to your limits in a mental way. I mean, the physical, they use the physical to push that mental. Decision-making under pressure, how you cope with other people when you're under pressure, resilience, and it's not so much about doing it harder, just stepping back and go, is there a different way to do it to get to the same aim? So, you know, teamwork, decision-making, resilience, I mean, they're all things that, you know, you'd want of any employee.
Absolutely.
Just a bit more extreme maybe. But
well, I was going to say that, you know, I think people have this idea of what it must be like in the SAS, but we can't possibly know because we haven't lived it. But also there is a degree of secrecy around it. We're not supposed to know everything that goes on there, and that's, you know, for very valid reasons. But in terms of developing those skills of resilience and toughness and being innovative and all that sort of stuff, I mean, you've taken it to an extreme level. I mean, does it take a certain kind of person to flourish in that environment, which you obviously did because you became commander of the SAS, but it's not for everyone, is it? You've got to have certain attributes, don't you, to be the sort of individual who's going to really blossom in that environment.
I think that's right. And, you know, this is this, nature versus nurture. I think there's some intrinsic capabilities you need, but I also think...
And for you, what were they, do you think? What was it that allowed you to become commander of the SAS?
Look, it's always that interesting thing when you're talking about yourself, but I'm most probably a fairly resilient person. But I think that's been born out of, you know, obviously part of that is from my parents. Dad's a Fremantle lad, mum's from Midland. You know,
obviously not a Docker supporter though.
Well, actually, he is. He's a big Docker supporter. Every time I'm taken to an Eagles function, he's wearing his Eagles tie, but he's got purple socks on. I mean, really. He drops his fork and I look down and I go, Dad, you've got your purple socks on again.
Get out.
No, I don't say that. He says to me, I love you, son, but you can't take the Dockers out.
You've all got your flaws, I suppose.
Yeah. No, we have great rivalry. Yeah. We love it. I love both sides, you know, so... But I think, back on it, there's that resilience aspect. I think over time, the ability to develop a workable decision under pressure is most probably something that, you know, it develops, but it's a bit of your own, you know, where you come from.
Mm.
And I suppose getting on with people, you know, that can be developed as well. So they're most probably the three things. But look, it's not for everyone. But in saying that, all of those attributes can be developed. But I do think part of it's in you already.
Mm.
And I think then I'm still developing those attributes today.
Yeah.
But then that would be different. And there's that motivation to do it. But I think most of that motivation comes from, it's the professional excellence aspect, but it's also, you know, it's a meaningful role. You're serving this great country.
Yeah.
No different to police and no different to a whole lot of people in Australia. It's good to sit back in a reflective way and actually find that meaningfulness because, you know, getting out of bed every morning is pretty easy, you know, and serving this country is all the motivation I need.
Which you've done in some pretty hostile environments, Iraq and Afghanistan particularly. When you are in that world and there is a level of secrecy about it and you are in such an extreme environment, what's it like having to hold on to all of that, not being able to come home as most people do after a tough day at work and just be able to sit there and, you know, have a whinge to someone, just vent, just debrief when you are in an environment where you can't share like, I don't want to say a normal person can, but you know what I mean, in a more regular job, having to hold on to all of that. Is it a burden to you at all?
You know, we've got to realise that, you know, when you are on those operations, what you're doing at some level isn't normal. And it's important to put context around that and have all the mechanisms to deal with that. But I think a couple of key things, just in a broad sense, is it a burden? The responsibility for people's lives, for everyone, is a burden. And that's no different to work health and safety back here in Australia and working on a construction site, right through to out in the field. Is, you know, at the end of the day, that is a burden. I think in my mind, and this is a bit more, well, it's not philosophical, it's very real for me, I just go to the greater good. Are we here for the right reasons? Are we doing it for the right reasons? And that's important because it is our role and our job.
Mm.
And our role and our job, particularly in, well, right through from Timor, Iraq and Afghanistan, you know, at one level, it is about Australia's national interests and it is about helping people on the ground. It's about removing clear and present dangers. I mean, they're all for the good of our country, our society and our local communities. And, you know, that's no different to a policeman. It's no different to a nurse on the front line with COVID. Those things, they're all for the right reason. And I think that's what allows you to cope with that stress. The other thing is, it's a generic term and I'll say this, but it's mateship.
Yeah.
I mean, you've got people around you that are some of the best people I've got goosebumps now because it reminds me of just how good people can be under pressure.
Mm.
And, you know, that so the thing that alleviates that burden, if you like, that's the word we use, is doing it for the right reasons, serving your country, but you've just got some terrific people around you and you're in it together and at some level it is what it is and you've got to deal with it.
Mm.
That's no different to other organisations, you know, police, healthcare workers, you know, it's all the same. I've seen that. Between floods and fire and COVID, I mean, I think we've seen that, you know, the worst of what nature can throw up to us, if you put it into that broad perspective. But, you know, Australian firefighters, volunteer firefighters, even non-volunteer firefighters, I mean, what's the difference between a bit of lead coming at you and a fireball coming at you? The answer isn't. And ultimately it's about you're out there serving your community and actually the person alongside you. And what do you really want to do? get home to see your family.
Survive, yeah.
So I've painted that context to a couple of people in the who have volunteer firefighters, and I think at some level it's helped. You know, we're all in this together. You know, how our village turns out is up to us.
Yeah, absolutely. In terms of your own personal village, though, I mean, after 2 decades plus in the military, you've been awarded the Distinguished Service Medal, the Distinguished Service Cross. How did you know it was time to put an end to that chapter and move on to something else, which was around about 2007? Oh,
this is a really easy question.
Okay.
But let me explain about those medals. Those medals, quite frankly, as the commander, are really for what everyone around me did. I'm very happy to receive them, but I, you know, they were earned because of the incredibly good people that surrounded me, both in my command time and on operations and in training, to be frank. You know, in the unit, and we forget this, has been awarded a number of meritorious citations and gallantry citations. I say the SAS, and that shouldn't be underestimated because they've done some incredibly good work over many, many years. How did I know it's time? That's a really good question. And I felt at commanding officer time, I'd been given as good as I'd got. But actually, I got a lot more out of the military than I could ever repay. And people will be sitting there listening going, okay, that's a pretty stressful occupation. It is, but that notion of service and what you get out of there and doing things for your country is really quite powerful. I learnt a lot. I was tested. I had really good people around me. I mean, the people that I really need to thank, quite frankly, are the people around me, but the biggest people I need to thank are my family.
Yeah.
I mean, my wife and my children, immense. My wife, anyone that knows her, she is a pillar of strength at any level. She's been with me the whole way. And to be really frank, the reason I moved on at that level after CO was really because of my family and my children.
Was there a moment on a family holiday in Rottnest that was sort of the clincher for you?
Well, you're well researched.
I might have come across that at some point, James.
Look, it wasn't really.
Was that like a final straw for you?
Not really. It was a bit of a light bulb moment.
Yeah.
And that was, it was interesting. I was with my mates and enjoying. I think it was the only holiday I'd had for quite some time, a number of years. And I think I was a day two into it. This sort of boat turned up at the jetty and everyone goes, is James going? And off I zoomed off on this very, very sleek boat back to another operation. And look, I don't want to be dramatic about it but I'm speaking on behalf of military people. But I just want to give you a sense of what happens. I'd come back from, I think, about a 3 or 4 or 5 month operation. I said, don't wait the kids, Kath, because I'll see him in the morning. Over that night, I was redeployed and didn't see him again for another period of time. But actually, the giving as good as I got was important to me. It was also a bit of about a plan with my wife. The day I left, I had good friends, my best man, say to me, I can see the stress drain from Kath's face. And you know, we've got to remember that with all those families out there that support people that serve, police, healthcare, da-da-da-da-da. It's not just the person at the front. It's all that those families, they deserve all the medals, quite frankly.
They deserve
the medals. Because when you're on the job, you're on the job.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
So I left because of family, and I think in life you've got to make those decisions, and I haven't regretted it, but I still love serving.
Let's take another break, James. After that, we'll ask you how you managed to transition from that world into the corporate world. On paper, at least, it seems a pretty seamless transition, but maybe you could shed some more light on that. This is Inspiring Stories. James McMahon is our special guest. Back with more soon.
You're listening to Inspiring Stories for Bowra and O'Day. Don't miss out on the little moments because the little things are everything. Inspiring Stories for Bowra and O'Day. Don't miss out on the little moments because the little things are everything.
Welcome back to Inspiring Stories. Tim McMillan is my name. My special guest is James McMahon. James, after a long, distinguished career in the military, you decide, for family reasons, I've got to make a change. you enter the corporate world. If you read your profile online somewhere, it seems like you finished one, you started the other. It was all a pretty seamless transition. Is that how it was for you, or was there a bit more turbulence than that?
I suppose it was, and I did mention previously I'm quite a task-orientated person. Yeah. So, look, I studied for that first year out. The Eagles, if you remember back, I think it was 07, they asked me to come in and help with a bit of a review in some of the cultural stuff that was going on. Got involved there. Someone also asked me, in fact, I could tell you it was Mark Barnabar, if I'd like to also, you know, join Azure Capital. I was finishing my MBA off. And I suppose, you know, I was still, technically, I was on leave, but I'd realise those opportunities were presented. And I think, you know, at some point you got to go, if the door's open, you go through it.
Mm.
And so I went through it. I really enjoyed my work at the Eagles, really enjoyed working. I started out as the Chief Operating Officer at Azure Capital, and then, you know, then we built a number of divisions, and I went in to the management consulting area there over the next number of years, which led me into corrective services, which was great.
Which seems like a curious thing, because you've sort of gone into this corporate world, you know, getting your feet under the table there quite nicely.
Yeah, very nicely.
Board position, and then you want to go back into a prison environment?
Yeah, well, it's corrective services.
Sorry, corrective services. Not
prisons, but and that's for all the right reasons. Yeah, look, and I think it goes back to something that I've realised is part of my life. In fact, I was having a chat with someone recently about this. You know, it's that service dynamic. And I, rightly or wrongly, thought that I could make a difference in that area. I think I'd written a paper on it as a consultant, or I had something that I was writing some papers on. And I really, that service bit really got me. And I got to say, no different to when I'd spoken previously about serving your country and community. I mean, corrective services people, prison officers, they do an incredibly good job. And I've said this previously, quite frankly, they never get thanked. And they should be thanked, because they really are changing people's lives. Mm. And it never gets looked at that. Mistakes are made every now and then, and that's part of the cohort. But you've got to risk to get that return. And but in saying that, it's complex. You've got the victims that you've really got to look after, you know, that need to be looked after, and rightly so. But that time there and the reform package we did is something I'm very proud of. And you know, from all accounts, it continues on today.
When you were brought into that role, it's been said, I think the minister at the time, who was probably instrumental in your appointment, talked about it being a period of corruption and rotting within the system. I suppose a bit, not the same, but a little bit like when you went into the Eagles, there was a cultural problem there. You've gone into another area of the community that had a cultural issue. This seems to be a bit of a pattern for you, James. You seem to go in there to reset a culture.
Well, there might be a little theme here about,
I think so.
You know, I like to take a challenge on.
Yeah. But were you abundantly aware of those challenges when you went into the corrective services role?
Look, I was, but it's a bit like the Eagles as well. It's never as bad as you think, and it's never as good as you think. Mm. And I think the majority of people in both organisations were very much moving the right way. It's just about bringing that out and putting some structures in place that allow us to get that 1+1=3. And that's what good cultures do.
You would have had to crack a few heads in there, though, wouldn't you?
Look, there were some robust discussions at a whole range of levels. But the reality is it's ultimately about bringing people along. And then my personal view is, you know, it's like everything in life. It's three strikes and you've got to say, you know, what's good for that person? Do you really want to be here from now on? Because it can't be good for that person if you don't fit in that dynamic, that culture. But I, you know, if you look at corrective services, they wear a badge on their arm. They're very proud people. They do a great job. The Eagles Footy Club, they're all about going forward. And I think you just sometimes need a framework and a spark to bring that out.
Yeah.
And I'd like to think that I helped in both cases doing that.
Yeah.
You know, and it's very rewarding work.
Mm. One of the things that, that caught people's attention at the time was that you would not only focus on the idea of rehabilitation, but you'd go to the lengths of actually sitting in a cell with a prisoner and talking about how they were going, what they needed, what they wanted, yeah. what could be done better. How did yeah. that sit with some of the people who'd been in the system for a long time and thought that wasn't what you should be doing?
Oh, look, I think, well, you know, there's that security aspect. I'm a commissioner. I didn't wear a uniform because I felt, you know, I was the commissioner, but I wasn't a prison officer. It's a bit like wearing an SAS uniform and you're not in the SAS. And you know, there's the whole community aspect, which is, you know, a whole lot of staff that work outside the wire. So, look, some people were most probably worried about my security. But I think from an example perspective, to be fair, you know, engaging with prisoners to motivate them to correct is what it's all about. That's the role. It's called corrective services for that reason. And, you know, engaging with those prisoners is really important. So I suppose in some ways I found that satisfying, but I'd like to think in some ways it was most probably also trying to just set the example. Mm.
Were you surprised by some of the conversations you had with people who were in there behind bars?
Yeah, I was. Yeah, it did surprise me. But I think over the period of time I was there, you know, understanding how people got into the system was most probably eye-opening to me. And it sort of leads on to everything from early childhood, what happened in their teen years, et cetera, et cetera. Mm. I mean, there's no excuse for not obeying the law. I'm not suggesting that. But getting a greater understanding where some people came from, it just gave me a fuller awareness and it made me a bit more balanced about my views on things. And as a commissioner, you do have to be balanced.
Yeah. And I think that's a hard message to communicate to people sometimes, isn't it? If someone's a victim of a violent crime, people often react in a way that just says, lock them up forever. And, you know, they're beyond rehabilitation, just longer sentences, you know, they go down that road without perhaps stopping, breathing and taking on the complexity of the situation.
And, you know, the spectrum is it's very complex because, you know, the victims of, you know, are right up in the forefront of your mind.
Mm.
But right at the end, from a task focus perspective, what you're doing is correcting someone's behaviour.
Yeah.
So that's the focus. And, it was rewarding I'm hesitating on the word enjoyable.
Rewarding, yeah.
But it was, it was back to serving again.
Yeah.
And that's, I suppose, a theme there.
Another
and
way
some,
that you've been.
Some very, very good people in the organisation.
More unsung heroes. They're everywhere.
I personally think that.
Yeah.
And don't get talked about a lot and, in my view, don't get thanked enough.
Time is rapidly getting away from us, James. We need to cover some more chapters in your career as well, including working with the War Memorial, the RSL and the Fathering Project as well. So plenty more to get through right after we take a break. This is Inspiring Stories, back with more in a moment.
You're listening to Inspiring Stories for Bowra and O'Day. Don't miss out on the little moments because the little things are everything. Inspiring Stories for Bowra and O'Day. Don't miss out on the little moments because the little things are everything.
Welcome back to Inspiring Stories. Our special guest is the West Australian of the Year in 2019. He still holds that title, but only for a few more days in James McMahon. I suppose, James, you will always be the 2019 West Australian of the Year, but we'll all have a new one in a matter of days, just to be a little bit pedantic. One of the other things that you've gotten involved with in more recent years, James, is the Fathering Project. Why was that something that drew you in?
Look, it's very simple. Two points. One, because of Professor Bruce Robinson. I'd met him at a function and I was just, you know, the way he came across, I was really intrigued.
Mm.
And then when philosophically that piece about fathering and the better father you are, the better your children or potentially as a father figure, other children grow up to be. I mean, that's about turning the tap off. That's preventative rather than trying to fix an issue later on. Or even it's just self-motivating that someone who's already going along well gets that extra lift. And I think it's about a father being the best father he can be or being a father figure. So it's not about whether you've got children or not. It's actually, I often say it takes a village, and it's a well-known thing to say, it takes a village to raise a child. And I think that's what got me. And I then went and set it up at, or helped set it up at John 23rd, was the initial chairman there. But, you know, to see a group of dads talking around, you know, after we heard like John Worsfold as a guest speaker, having a few beers and pizzas, to see dads talking about fathering. And my 85-year-old dad said, geez, I wish that was around when I was raising you. I mean, it's just a wonderful program. It's going Australia-wide. It's been in an AFL clubs. There's even aspects of it going into the justice system. Just by motivating fathers to be as good as they can, to engage their children, daddy dates, you know, and a very important program. So I'm proud to be an ambassador, and I really enjoy what it's all about.
And on a personal level, was it tough for you being a dad during those years when you were in the SAS?
Look,
just given the volume of time you're away.
It is tough. It is tough. But I'll be really honest. My focus was elsewhere. And you know, I knew that when I reflected, But, you know, some people have that capacity. I've sort of got to focus on one thing at a time. Yeah. And so when you are on operations, you are on operations. But you'd realised the importance of fatherhood when you got home and how important it was. So, and as I've said before, I'm lucky I've had a I've got a great wife who's who was there to play
hero.
Both roles. Yeah, correct.
We are rapidly running out of time. I just want to mention as well, you've been are on the board of St John of God Healthcare, the Australian War Memorial as well. You're trustee of the SAS Resources Fund Board. You've been part of an investment committee for the RSL here in WA. All these sorts of things. It seems like you know, even though you go through these different phases in your career, the lure of public service seems to draw you back. So, James, as you look ahead to whatever's coming in the years to come in your life, is there anything you have a burning ambition to be a part of in the future stages of your career?
Look, you know, I'll do what I've done previously. You know, everything I'm doing, I'm enjoying at the moment. I do enjoy serving, so that's important. So all those extracurricular things, if you like.
I'm not suggesting you take any more on because you're clearly a busy man.
No, but I think it comes back to the essence of what we're talking about. I suppose this is a bit about me, but actually that aspect of service, I'm involved with those things because I enjoy serving, but you get more than you give. And as I said when I became West Australian of the Year, you know, ultimately this state is really built on that. It's our centre of gravity is our people, their willingness to serve. And as I said, as we come into the Celebrate WA weekend, which is a great time to reflect, let's remember all in our community that serve. The little acts of kindness, the big things that get done out there, serving is our centre of gravity.
Thank you so much for coming in and sharing your story. I feel like we've just scratched the surface, but we could go on forever, but we better not. Thank you so much.
Yeah, thanks, Tim. I really enjoyed doing this. And everyone, let's have a great Celebrate WA weekend and reflect on all the good things that are in WA.
You've been listening to Inspiring Stories here on 882 6PR. Don't miss out on the little moments because the little things are everything. We look forward to you joining us next time as we unearth another inspiring story.
You're listening to Inspiring Stories for Bowra and O'Day. Don't miss out on the little moments because the little things are everything.